オフィシャル K-1 パッキャスト K-1 バトルキャスト
私やった
You'll get news, fight reviews, and fighter interviews And now, your hosts, Michael Chaverot and Jonathan Shea
Welcome to K-1 Battlecast, the official podcast of the all-new reborn K-1 Worldwide. I'm Michael Chiavello, down under in Melbourne, Australia, joined as always by my verbal sparring partner up and over in Tokyo, Japan. A big g'day to Jonathan Shea. G'day, Jonathan.
G'day, Michael. It's good to be here with you.
Good to hear your voice as always, my friend, and what an exciting time it is to be a K-1 fan with so much action about to come our way as the middle of the year approaches.
Oh my gosh, Michael, I could not agree more. You know, I'm going to just list them off here and you'll bear with me because I'm going to go on a rant. So first off, on June 13th, we have the K-1 Fighting Network tournament that's going to be taking place in Galați, Romania, which is going to feature Stoyan Koprovlensky. You may remember he was knocked out of the World Max on March 20th, but he's back in the action. On June 29th, we have K-1 World Grand Prix in Sarajevo, Bosnia, and it's going to be the Eastern European round, and it's, you know, like we mentioned last week, it's a face-off between the old guard and the new. We're going to see who makes it through to the, you know, through that qualifying round into the finals that are going to take place on at the end of the year. That's the World Grand Prix finals, the heavyweight finals. And then following that, on July 7th, we have the K-1 World Max 2024 final, and it's going to be a showdown between the seven fighters who made it through the qualifying round on March 20th and a mystery wild card. And I can't reveal a name. I'm telling you, there's still a couple of really great names on the table, and I know that we're building a lot of like mystery and whatever, but you know, these negotiations are a complicated matter. There's always things that are changing. We wish we could give you that information sooner. But I'm telling you, there are a couple of really, really big names that are being dropped. Then, of course, on the July 27th, we have the K-1 World Grand Prix 2024 in Rossellini, which is the Western European round. Going to see who's going to qualify to go into the finals in the heavyweight division there. And in August, we have the South American round of the World Grand Prix 2024, and that'll be in Brazil. A lot to look forward to there. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the 55 kilogram and under category that the qualifying round, which is going to take place on July 7th, but the finals is going to take place in Osaka on September 29th, and that will feature fighters like Kumura and Kaneko, who had a fight that was deemed the best fight of 2023 in kickboxing. So a lot of action to look forward to. I could go on and on and on, but I'm going to leave it here.
Good time to be alive if you're a K-1 fan. Well, we have spent the last few episodes deep diving into the K-1 Max final participants who will throw down on July 7 in Tokyo to be crowned the K-1 Max champion. And today, it's all about Dengue Silva of Brazil. So let me start by saying the first time I saw Dengue Silva, whose real name is Rafael, by the way, the first time I saw Dengue was at the pre-fight photo shoot a few days before the K-1 Max final, and my initial thought was, this guy is tall. My second thought was, he has eyes like a serial killer. Now, okay, that may sound a little bit harsh, but you've got to see Dengue's eyes up close. They are like ice on fire, the types of eyes that burn into your soul. But back to the height of the man. He was wearing these tight jeans which accentuated his legs, and I thought, super tall but skinny legs. He's lithe, fluid, very much a physique built for Muay Thai or basketball, but definitely Muay Thai physique. And when I say tall, he seemed freakily tall for this weight. The guy is 6'3". That's 190 centimeters, and he tips in at only 70 kilos. Now, I don't know what Dengue's walk-around weight is, but I'm guessing it isn't far off that 70-kilo mark. And that's amazing. 6'3" as a 70-kilo fighter. To give you some comparison, Dengue Silva is taller than Branko Cicatic, taller than Mark Hunt, taller than Andy Hug, the same height as Jerome Lebanner, and Dengue is only 70 kilos. Incredible. I always say, Jonathan, that being tall is only an advantage, though, if you know how to fight tall.
I totally agree with you, and we have talked about this before, but what about someone like Hong Man Choi, who was 7'3"?
Okay, let's take Hong Man Choi. Like you said, Jonathan, he was 7'3". Now, theoretically, nobody should have been able to get close to Choi to land a blow. The guy had a foot over Mighty Mo, yet Mighty Mo knocked him out with an overhand right. Lots of fighters touched up Hong Man Choi because Choi did not know how to use his height. He didn't know how to use his strength. What should have been Choi's greatest strength actually became a chink in his armor. Now, compare Choi to Semi Schultz. Schultz is 6'11", and he knew how to use every inch of that height to become a four-time K1 Grand Prix champion. In his heyday, Semi Schultz was untouchable, and I mean that literally and figuratively. He stayed long. He stayed high. He used his reach to keep opponents on the outside. To get past Schultz's length, you had to work hard. Bada Hari got there in Amsterdam once, but he didn't get there again when they fought in 2009 in the K1 Grand Prix final. Ray Sefo got there once. He dropped Semi Schultz early on, but then Semi ended up finishing Ray Sefo. Peter Ertz got there a couple of times, and I dare say the two times that Peter Ertz beat Semi, Peter did some of the hardest work he ever did in his whole career, especially when he beat Semi in Seoul in the final 16 in 2008. So this brings me to Denge Silva. 190 centimeters tall, but can he fight long? Can he use his height? The answer, as we saw against Riku, is yes. Now, before we discuss this fight, I want to say that Riku is a good fighter, but I don't think he was ever going to be a threat to Denge Silva. In fact, as much as I like Riku as a fighter and as a person outside the ring, I'm sorry to say that he wouldn't have been a threat to anyone in the final 16, I think, except Rei Nakajima. So although this was an impressive win for Denge Silva, and I'll get into it a little more in a moment, he didn't really get tested here. Everyone else got put through the ringer in a much harder way than Denge Silva on March 20. Before we get into the fight, I want to mention that I love the whole big scorching mosquito shtick. I love it. The nickname Denge, taken from Denge Fever, of course, I love that. In fact, I think Denge needs to add to the gimmick, redo his entrance music, include an annoying buzzing sound, you know, the sound a mosquito makes when it's buzzing around your ear. There are a few more annoying sounds, especially at night when you're trying to sleep and it's humid and there's a buzzing mosquito you just can't slap away from your ear. I hate that sound. It would be perfect for Rafael Silva to bring a buzzing mosquito sound into his walkout. He needs the hats. He needs the t-shirts, he needs the scarves, the whole nine yards. What the hell? Come out drinking bags of fake blood through a straw, man. Go the whole hog with the mosquito gimmick. I love it. Jonathan, I know you're a huge fan of good entrances as well. I think I'm onto something here. We've got to let Rafael know that he's got to go the whole nine yards on the whole mosquito gimmick, man.
You know, I am a big fan of the entrance because it sets the tone for the match ahead and the crowd gets that kind of group mind expectation that it's really impossible to have by yourself. You really have to share that with other people, and I really feel that sets the tone for the upcoming match. There was, however, one interesting thing that happened while Denge was waiting to fight, and it happened a few times throughout the match. He started licking his lips, and we'll find out why that's a little bit more important later.
So let's dive into the fight. Right off the bell, Denge Silva is going heavy artillery. He starts the fight in orthodox stance and he drills this superb straight right cross in the opening second. And immediately afterwards, he switches to southpaw stance. This is great. I mean, what a way to have Riku guessing from the opening bell. Denge stays in southpaw for a while, tests the waters with some front kicks and round kicks to the body and the legs, and then switches back to orthodox and starts nailing Riku with that right hand. I really like Denge Silva in orthodox stance. His punches are strong. His guard is good. He moves lightly on the balls of his feet. There's a fluidity about him, and he can play both the offensive first strike game and the counter game. 80 seconds into the fight, Denge Silva drops Riku. It's a weird one because During the knockdown process, Dengue changes stance. When he wants to kick, he uses southpaw stance. And when he wants to punch, he uses orthodox stance. Now, I've never seen someone who wasn't from like a taekwondo background switch so much in such a short amount of time. But Dengue lands a liver kick on Riku from southpaw, goes back to orthodox, and lands a right and a left that drops Riku. Riku gets up by the count of five, but his brain is scrambled and there's a cut above his left eye. It's a bad cut. Blood is pissing down the side of his face, threatening to get into that eye. You know, mosquitoes love blood. So this was like a red flag waved in front of Dengue Silva because the fight recommences and he charges. I mean, Silva is blood wild, blood hungry, blood thirsty right now. He comes out in orthodox stance. He misses with the punches, switches to southpaw, throws a jumping round kick that has Riku backpedaling and boots scooting away from him. And Dengue is a house on fire, man. He has gone full-blown savage. He wants to finish. And with 65 seconds to go in the round, the referee calls time and Riku gets looked at by the doctor. They can't stop the bleeding above Riku's eye. And Dengue Silva punches his ticket for the K1 Max final. Let me tell you, folks, Rafael Dengue Silva is a bad, bad man. Again, he didn't get tested at all by Riku. I don't think Riku landed a clean shot on him. Why? Because Dengue Silva knows how to use his length. Riku couldn't get on the inside to box him. Silva in southpaw stance outkicked him. Silva in orthodox stance outpunched him. I liked everything I saw from Dengue Silva. But let me tell you something, Jonathan. If the switch stance is part of his game and Riku didn't have time to get a read on it or prepare for it, you better believe that Darryl Verdonk is preparing for it. If I saw it, Verdonk and his team have seen it. And that could be bad for Dengue Silva. Is it something Dengue always does? Is it just that he kicks better from southpaw and punches better from orthodox? If so, it's very unique. It's unusual for anyone. But it's also maybe an easy read. If I read it, Verdonk will read it. It's a tell for Dengue Silva. So let's see if Silva uses the same tactic against Verdonk on July 7. To say that Dengue Silva is a favorite on July 7 because of his size alone is to really do him a disservice. Semi Schulte didn't win Grand Prix because of his size alone. Now, it certainly helped. It helped a hell of a lot. But Semi had work rate. He had a gas tank that could last for days. He had discipline and he had tremendous oos spirit. Does Dengue have the same? Riku didn't test him. So there's no chance for us to know. We know that Semi Schulte stood up to the pounding of Peter Ertz. He beat Peter Ertz twice. Peter Ertz beat him twice. But Peter didn't knock him out. We know that Semi Schulte got dropped by Ray Sefo, came back and knocked out Ray Sefo. Does Dengue Silva have the same sort of heart if he gets pounded on, if he gets dropped to come back and win? Look, Dengue's punching is good. His kicking is good. He has killer finishing instinct. Does he have a jaw? How's his body? Verdonk's going to test him, man, on July 7. And Verdonk will also be tested. Verdonk's going to give away 14 centimeters in height to Rafael Silva on July 7. Any way you cut this one, Jonathan, it is going to be interesting.
It certainly is going to be, Michael. And, you know, the 11 blow combination, 9 of which hit Riku on that right side of his, the left side of his face, that combination stunlocked Riku completely. And I was speaking with Yoshihiro Sato, who, as you know, is the former K1 World Max Japan champion. He was saying that something like that would not land on Verdonk because the skill level is higher. It only landed on Riku because there was such a gap in their skill level. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops.
All right, folks, so that's enough from me deep diving into Dengue Silva. It's time to speak for the man himself. I was lucky enough to catch up with Rafael all the way from Brazil, and a big thank you to his translator who answers these questions in English from Rafael's Portuguese answers. Dengue Silva, the big scorching mosquito, thank you so much for your time. I want to ask you, what was your reaction when you were invited to be a part of the K1 Max Final 16?
It was one of the best news of my life. I always watch K1 from the social media, and now being part of it, it makes me very happy.
So like most of the other K1 Max fighters, did you grow up as a fan of K1? And tell me about watching K1 as a kid.
Actually, I started a little bit late in the sport, 18 years old. But after I found myself as a fighter, I just found out about the K1, and then after that, I was watching all the fights. I never let any fight without me watching.
Who was your favorite K1 fighter growing up?
I always liked a lot Boakau. I always watch all of his fights. He's a big inspiration for all the Muay Thai kickboxing fighters and for myself too.
What was your favorite K1 fight of all time, whether it was heavyweight or middleweight?
I think Boakau versus Masato. K1 final 2004. This fight is amazing.
So, Dengue, you fought Riku in the final 16. How did you rate your performance in that fight? Was it perfect, or do you think you could have done anything different?
Actually, I did an amazing presentation to the Japanese crowd, and I think I let everybody know about me, a good impression about me, you know.
Your height is obviously a major factor of your success. How do you train to fight tall and use that natural advantage?
I think every athlete has something that makes him different. My height makes me different from other fighters. I think besides that, being very technical and smart is one of the best things that I have.
Would you describe yourself as a counter fighter?
Actually not. I'm more a hunter than a counter fighter. I don't stop punch my opponents until he's on the ground.
How does it make you feel, Rafael, to know that you are the tallest fighter in the history of K1 Max?
Really? In the history of K1 Max, I'm the tallest fighter. It's amazing to know that, and I'm very surprised, actually, but I'm very happy to be part of K1 history right now.
It is amazing that a man of your size can make the 70-kilo weight limit. What's the secret to being able to make the weight at that tremendous height?
Actually, I'm already a very light fighter. I don't lose that much weight to fight in the 70 kilos category. Actually, I think you'll be surprised if I fight on the 66 kilograms category, because my height and my weight will make your jaw drop.
So you avoided Ouyang Feng at the K1 Max draw. Why did you decide to go to the empty slot and not face Ouyang Feng in the quarterfinal?
I didn't avoid the one thing. I only chose him to win for him in the semifinals.
Besides yourself, do you consider Ouyang Feng to be the favorite on July 7? And if not Feng, who else?
Ouyang Feng, he's not favorite just because he's a champion. He's not the favorite. I'm the favorite here in this competition, and I'll be the champion on July 7.
You're going to take on Daryl Verdonk, who selected you because you are Dengue. Here's Daryl. There's something about the letter D that he enjoys. So it's Daryl versus Dengue. What are your thoughts about the Dutch fighter, Daryl Verdonk?
Actually, Verdonk is a young athlete that has a lot to learn, but he's already showing an amazing stand-up game in kickboxing, and this really excites me.
How do you think you beat Verdonk? Do you knock him out? Do you decision him? Maybe a stoppage by a cut again?
For sure, our fight is not going to go to the judge's hand. I'm going to drop him, for sure.
So, Rafael, Boakau may be the wild card for July 7. How do you feel about it if he is named the wild card?
As I said to you guys, I always follow Boakau's step and watch his fights and get to know that he could be my possible opponent. Makes me even more excited to face him, you know.
Rafael, you're on side A of the draw on July 7. Who do you see making it through to the final from the other side of the draw?
Actually, for me, it doesn't matter who comes or who will make to the other side. I'll be the champion, and that's what matters the most.
Rafael Silva, thank you so much, mate, for joining me on K1 Battlecast.
I'm getting the chance to speak with a lot of these fighters over the last weeks, interviewing them separately, and it's been a fascinating process. All of the fighters say they are so much looking forward to seeing who the wild card will be. And at the moment, Buakaw's name is on the table. He's the most visible. But we don't know who it's going to be yet. And without fail, everyone says, I'm so looking forward to facing Buakaw. And it just, you know, goes to show how much these fighters are all at the top of their game. And they are looking forward to the challenge of facing somebody as strong as Buakaw. So we'll see. All right, switching gears, everyone. We've got the listener mailbag. And this week, we have a question from Alan from Clearwater, Florida, who asks, I've always wondered just how big and scary was Hong Man Choi. Can you give us some ideas, Michael?
Alan, wonderful question, and one that I actually get asked a fair bit, because every time I post a photo that was taken of myself and Hong Man Choi backstage years ago, and I show people the photo, people are spellbound and flabbergasted by just how big Hong Man Choi is. The first time I ever saw Hong Man Choi, it was in the lobby of the Shintakanawa Prince Hotel in Tokyo, where we used to stay back in the day. I can't remember what year it was. It may have been 2000 and maybe 2005, 2006. But I was talking to Ray Sefo and Peter Ertz in the lobby at the time, and I think Jerome Labana was with us. And I saw all the heads in the lobby of all the Japanese people in the lobby and some tourists turn in one direction. And this direction was past me, so looking behind me. And I sort of thought to myself, what's everyone looking at? I didn't want to be rude though, because I was talking to Ray and Peter and Jerome. And then Ray said something to me. He gave me a tap on the shoulder. He goes, brother, here's that big Korean. I thought, okay, cool. I turned around, and just as I did, Hong Man Choi walked past me. And I may have pooed my pants a little bit. This guy is scarily big. I had never seen a human being that large. He is enormous. And when I say enormous, it's everything about him is huge. The guy is 7'3" to begin with. But of course, he suffered from gigantism, the same thing that affected like Andre the Giant. And when you suffer gigantism, your organs and parts of your body are continually growing. They never stop growing, which is why it's led to so many early deaths, I guess you could say, for so many sufferers of gigantism. Unless, I believe, and don't quote me on this medically, but I believe unless they can get a tumor or something removed from their brain, from around the hypothalamus region or around the pituitary region of the brain, which I believe that Hong Man Choi has had that removed years later, but at this time he hadn't. So when he walked past, it's the head of the guy is massive. I mean, it's like the Easter Island statues. It's just huge. It's a massive head. It's huge. It's enormous. The hands are enormous. The feet are like bobsleds, like canoes. They're massive. So when he walked past, and he was walking past not just me, and I'm like 5'10 and a half, but past Jerome, who's 6'3", Peter Ertz, who's like 6'5", 6'6", and here's Hong Man Choi just walking past us and dwarfing us all. It's scary. Really scary. And like I said, a shiver down my spine, because you think to yourself, how does creation manage to produce a human being that big? And especially one from Korea. I mean, it's rare you see any Korean that is even surpassing, 6'1", 6'2". Here's a guy who's 7'3", 320 pounds and built. He's not fat. Hong Man Choi's built, man. There's no fat or flab on him. But let me tell you a really fun story, a really interesting behind-the-scenes story about Hong Man Choi. And it's from Dream 9, actually, when he fought Jose Canseco in the Giants contest they had back then. And Bob Sapp was a part of that, and Minua Man was a part of that, of course. It was an awesome, Sokaju was a part of it, an awesome, Giants tournament they had. So Jose Canseco is our American fans. Alan, no doubt you'll know the name. Former Major League Baseball star. He was one of the Bash Brothers, one of the biggest hitters in MLB history. Baseball superstar Canseco. And here he was signed on to fight Hong Man Choi in a mixed martial arts contest. So we're there at the the pre-rules reading for Dream a couple of days before the event. And it's myself and Ray Sefo and Jan the Giant Norte. And Jan the Giant himself is about 6 foot 11, almost 7 foot, and even he's dwarfed by Hongman Choi. Anyway, we're sitting there and Jose Canseco is at the table next to us. And he's only there with his girlfriend, Heidi Northcutt. Jose Canseco did zero training and had no corner crew with him. He only had his girlfriend at the time, Heidi Northcutt. He's sitting there at the table next to us and Hongman Choi walks in the room. As soon as Hongman Choi walks in the room, Canseco sees him for the first time. Jose Canseco had no idea who he was fighting. He knew the name because he'd read it on a sheet of paper. And I saw the color drain from Canseco's face. It was funny, but also I felt real empathy for the guy, if that's the word, because I felt sorry for him. His face not only drained of color, it changed color. Like it turned green, like he was about to be sick. His jaw dropped. It visibly dropped when he saw Hongman Choi walk in the room. And that was the guy he was going to fight in 2 days' time. For want of a better phrase, he was shitting himself. Now, after this rules reading, myself and Ray and Jan Norte are standing in the lobby chatting, and Canseco comes over to us. And we say hello, shake his hand, and he's visibly shaken. And he's going, guys, what are the rules for this fight? And we're like, dude, they just went through the rules in the rules meeting. You weren't listening? I mean, this is mixed martial arts, man. This is wrestling, kicking, boxing, kneeing, elbows, ground fighting, stand-up fighting. It's everything. The only thing that Hongman Choi won't be able to do to you, Canseco, is pound you in the groin, headbutt you, and fishhook you. Anything else he can pretty much do. And Canseco just was frozen. He was scared. And he goes, so I'm seriously, it's an all-out fight against that huge giant. That's the guy I'm taking on. And we're like, yes. He goes, what the hell do I do? So I think that Jose Canseco had signed the contract for Dream thinking that maybe he was going to do a pro wrestling bout that was all going to be choreographed, or maybe it was going to be some sort of exhibition bout, not realizing it was a legit fight. And, you know, we looked at each other. Here's Jose asking us for advice. What do I do against Hongman Choi? And we're like, bro, you just got to move. I mean, just get on your bike and move. Hongman Choi is huge, but he's slow. Glaciers move faster than Hongman Choi. Hit the guy, move. Hit the guy, move. Actually, don't even hit the guy. Just move around the ring as much as you can. And that's what he did. Or he tried to do for as long as the fight lasted. Now, Jose Canseco did have a background, he told us, in Taekwondo and some other martial arts. Again, he came to the ring to the Wild Thing entrance. It was one of my favorite entrances of all time. Wild Thing music, the baseball bat over his shoulder, Heidi Northcutt with him in his corner. And I was asking the question during the walkout on HDNet, how is he possibly going to beat Hongman Choi? And Guy Mezger, who was commentating with me at the time, UFC great Guy Mezger, said, now I know why he's bringing the baseball bat out to the ring is because maybe he's going to use it to try and beat Hongman Choi. It's the only way he can beat Hongman Choi. Now, we all know what happened. Canseco landed some side kicks early on. He tried to move around Choi. Eventually, Choi put hands on him, dropped him, took him down, and pounded him out. It was all over. But it just goes to show, and Canseco, no small dude himself. Canseco's built, he's jacked, he's a big boy, but he absolutely, and to use an Aussie expression here, here's one to add to your Aussie vernacular, Jonathan, he shit his dax when he fought Hongman Choi, because Choi is freaking huge. And I think anyone who fought Hongman Choi initially, before you knew what Hongman Choi was all about, and before he got exposed, would have shit their dax at the prospect of fighting Hongman Choi. So Alan from Florida, great question. A good question I get asked a lot, and gave me an opportunity to tell that behind-the-scenes story about Jose Canseco. So thanks, Alan, for that question.
Oh, that's really nostalgic. I mean, we worked together, of course, on HDNet, you and I, and Mr. Mezger. Hope he's doing well. And, you know, after listening to that story about Jose Canseco fighting Hongman Choi, I'm going to have to check my DAX. That's the imagery. Now, I have freakishly large feet by Japanese standards. They're size 30 centimeter, which I guess by Western standards is not too big, but in Japan, you cannot find a pair of shoes anywhere that goes that size. So I have to go to these places like Gorilla or Gulliver or, you know, Monster or whatever. Like, I feel like a freak when I go into these large shoe stores. And every single time I go in there, I see a picture of, a signed picture, by the way, of Hongman Choi on the wall. So I guess I'm in good company.
Well, folks, that's another week of K1 Battlecast, the official podcast of K1 Worldwide. Join us next week, where once again, we will deep dive into a K1 Max Final 8 participant, and we'll look at the man that most people are calling the favorite, at least at this stage, Ouyang Feng, the new emperor of Asia. He will be our focus on next week's K1 Battlecast. Until then, I'm Michael Schiavello.
And I'm Jonathan Cheer.
Thanks for joining us and catch us again next week. See you guys.
Unless you live under a rock or a Luddite like myself who just avoids technology of all kinds, you can reach out to us via X, Twitter, and Instagram. We also have an email address. Please send in your questions. We would love to hear from you. The information is in the show notes, but in case you don't want to go down there, we understand. Our email address is k1battlecast@k-1.world. I know it doesn't make sense, but that's the crazy world that we live in. Nothing makes sense anymore, except the wonderful conversations that we have here on K1 Battlecast. Anyways, everyone, we hope you have a wonderful week. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.